An average of 20 military veterans kill themselves every day. Project Operation Barnabas is a network of LCMS congregations who reach out to veterans and their congregations and their communities with the gospel of Jesus Christ. Operation Barnabas is a program of LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. Find out more at lcms.org/armedforces. Serving those who serve. LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. lcms.org/armedforces.
In a week of big stories, Washington, D.C. just cranks them out one after another. In a week of big stories, this one is probably going to be probably the biggest one, the one that's going to be talked about the most, and that is President Trump's newly announced policy on transgender individuals in the military. We're going to be talking about it with Travis Weber. He's an attorney, Navy veteran, and director for the Center for Religious Liberty for the Family Research Council based in Washington, D.C. Travis, welcome to Issues Etc.
Thanks for having me on.
What was the policy before this announcement shaping up to be, and what changes with the president's announcement?
Well, previous to President Obama's policy as of last year, previous to that administration's policy, the military had not openly permitted those identifying as transgender to serve and with full integration and benefits accompanying military service. The Obama administration unilaterally reversed that and paved the way for the admission, acceptance, treatment, and provision of various benefits sought by those identifying as transgender. And President Trump's policy announced today reversed that policy, so it restored us to the status quo that we were at before the Obama administration, which was to prohibit, for a number of reasons, transgendered individuals from openly serving in the military.
So is it safe to say that the Trump policy now takes us back to pre-Obama policy?
That's exactly right.
Okay. So what was the problem in terms of, I think one of the things that the president cited was military readiness. That was part of his announcement. What was the problem with respect to military readiness under the Obama policy with regard to transgenders?
Well, you know, there's a number of factors which influence readiness. You know, one is, first and foremost, is cost associated with full medical benefits, provision of surgery, and associated treatment sought by those identifying as transgendered in the military. You know, obviously depends on how many seek that out, but that figure would be relatively high and detract from defense spending in other areas when the mission being, you know, the mission of the military is to focus on national security and win wars, don't want money going towards unknown, new, novel social engineering projects and policies. The second element, however, is the disruption to the unity of the military. The military has got a very important job to do, and I can speak to this having served. When you enter, you really shed your individuality. The focus is off the individual and on the mission, on the unity, and serving with those you're locking arms with. And when you have a policy like this with its potential to disrupt living quarters, intimate facilities, bathrooms, and other areas, you really disrupt the ability of the military to function well.
What about the downtime that is anticipated? If, I think under the Obama policy, a previous guest had mentioned that if one goes the whole route on surgery to transition surgically and chemically from male to, quote, female, for instance, we're talking about recovery times that stretch on to a year or more.
Yeah, these times are an additional factor, which I think negatively impact the readiness of the military. In addition to the cost, time, taking someone out of an ability to, at a moment's notice, be prepared to fulfill their military obligations and serve, you know, in whatever role that is. You take someone out for the recovery time, that impacts readiness. You know, and there are other areas, too, where this is going to have a negative impact. So, I mean, I think restoring us to status quo before, you know, President Obama changed this is a wise move.
Let's examine the kind of the objections that may be raised here. And, of course, we're already hearing them overwhelmingly. This is discrimination against transgender individuals. What's your response to that?
It's not discrimination. You know, the ability, people have no right to classify themselves as some sort of protected class when, you know, we've used the biological sex distinctions of male and female for decades. You know, I mean, for a number of years, that's the way we have made distinctions as a society, including in areas where it's crucial to do that, like the military. And to say that there are legitimate reasons for these distinctions, you know, does not, that basis is not just done away with because someone claims, well, it's discriminatory. There are real good reasons for these distinctions. Unfortunately, the label of discrimination and the political fever of the moment has caused many of these distinctions in the military and other areas to give way to the political flavor of the moment, and that's something that's unfortunate for the well-being of the military and society.
It seems to me that the military does an enormous amount of helpful discrimination, even in its recruitment and in its training and all of those things. Part of its job is to measure the fitness of an individual before they're even commissioned or before they're ever even signed up. They want to make sure that someone at the very least is physically able or mentally able to carry out that very difficult job.
This is a good point. You know, it's often overlooked, the fact that, you know, what do people mean when they use that term discrimination? And what they often mean is, you know, I want approval for the way I want to live or approval for this or that policy preference, but they use the label of discrimination. Unfortunately, you know, that just is not going to be helpful to the military and other areas where it's applied in that way, because we make distinctions in a number of ways, this being one of them, the biological sexes, that are helpful to the military, to society. And, you know, just because someone wants to label something, you know, that doesn't entitle them to have that preference enacted into law under the label of equality. Because, yeah, as you say, there are a number of other ways that we make these distinctions. The military, you can be disqualified for all sorts of medical reasons. I mean, I saw this when I served. You know, you can't fly if you have bad eyes. Okay, I mean, is that discrimination? So, really, you know, it's a sloppy label. It's a weak label. But people often don't examine it, and they just accept it.
I had an acquaintance some years back. He attended the United States Air Force Academy. He wanted, like everything, to be a fighter pilot, but he was 6'5", 6'6". He was simply too tall for the machine, and he had to settle for some other kind of flight duty and responsibilities. Is that what you're talking about?
Exactly. You know, and this happens in a number of ways. The service members who were too tall for certain duties, color blindness, you know, and honestly, you have the whole combat mission, admission being the sex distinctions, you know, coming into play in terms of certain roles in the military. We've done these things this way for good reason. And no one has a problem with saying that color blindness disqualifies you from certain things, that bad eyesight disqualifies you from flying and other things, because they see the reason for it. And the problem is we've lost sight of that with the whole discussion surrounding, you know, those who identify as transgendered. There's no objective discussion or examination of the science, you know, going on. If there was, we could have a legitimate, reasonable policy discussion, but people are immediately labeled, marginalized, called hateful if they object to anything but full acceptance of what the transgender movement wants. But that cowering to fear is not going to, you know, do our military or country any good in the long run. Unfortunately, it's going to be very harmful when we pursue something that harms people. And so, you know, we can only hope that there's a legitimate discussion of this. And I think, you know, really restoring us to the status quo is very helpful to the military.
There are also, I'm just thinking about certain physical standards that get thrown into complete confusion here. There are already kind of two standards for women in combat versus men in combat. I can only imagine the confusion that would be created when a woman who self-identifies as a man is going to, therefore, if the military recognizes her as a male, going to be held to male standards. That's completely and utterly confusing.
It is. You know, and you're seeing, all you have to do is look to how this has played out in athletic contests already in schools around the country. In certain instances, you have individuals identifying as the opposite biological sex, and really, you know, where it comes down to men claiming identity as a woman and then competing in women's sports contest and demolishing the field, you know, this type of thing really shows the issue you're pointing out here. You know, and it shows the silliness of it too, honestly, because part of the reason we've had these distinctions in sporting contests is generally there are differences in the ability of physical strength, physical ability in a number of different areas between men and women. Partly that's why we separate out sport contests. And so obviously this is going to pose a number of problems when it gets down to determining physical standards between men and women as they meet those standards, which the military has done. And then you factor in those identifying as the opposite biological sex, there's going to be, yes, some confusion and problems with that.
Finally, with only about a minute here, Travis, do you expect legal challenges to the president's announced policy on transgenderism in the military?
You know, there might be. We'll have to wait and see. Oftentimes, you know, you'll hear advocates and opponents of a policy like this act as the, and put forth statements as though it's somehow wildly illegal or you know, outside the bounds of law. But they're doing that to generate support and keep the controversy going. President Trump is following the law in this instance, and you know, there could be some challenges, but I don't think they're going to be successful.
Travis Weber is an attorney, a Navy veteran, director of the Center for Religious Liberty for the Family Research Council based in Washington, D.C. We will post a link to the Family Research Council under the Listen On Demand page at issuesetc.org. Travis, thank you very much for your time. Thanks for your service.
Thank you.
In Hour 2 of Issues, Etc., we look forward to Sunday morning. The gospel reading for this coming Sunday, according to the three-year lectionary, has a whole mess of parables. They're related and they're somewhat different. We have the parable of the treasure hidden in the field, the parable of that pearl of great price, of the dragnet. And then Jesus has some very cryptic things to say about new and old treasures being brought out. It's not easy treading, but we'll do it nonetheless as we look forward Sunday morning with Dr. Carl Fakencher of Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, in Hour 2 of Issues, Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues, Etc. Issues, Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues, Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Daily worship, historical hymnody, and catechesis interwoven with direct instruction in phonics, traditional math, literature, grammar, history, Latin, and strings. It's part of our daily life at St. Paul Lutheran School in Hamel, Illinois, the only classical Lutheran school in Greater St. Louis. We're located 1 mile off Interstate 55. For more information, visit school.stpaulhamel.org. We would love to share our joy in learning with your child. school.stpaulhamel.org.
Ever attended an Issues Etc. conference or any number of events that take place across the Synod and wondered why more people from your congregation aren't there? Then check out the special seminar package the CLCC is offering for the 500th anniversary. All you need so your circuit can prepare, promote, and present a seminar that will appeal to all the members of your congregation, provided for free by the CLCC. Just go to theclcc.org, theclcc.org, and click on the blue box, or check us out on Facebook.